greetings out there to everybody at TFMR. It is Thursday, May the 14th, 2020. It's time for your Thursday conversation. And joining us today after too long of an absence, I'm not sure where the time goes, is the legendary founder and director of Gold Money, Mr. James Turk. James, thank you so much. I really appreciate you spending some time.
It's great to speak with you, Craig, and always happy to be on your show.
Isn't it funny? I don't know where the time goes. I'd have to go back and look the last time we actually recorded something. And it's just, you know, it's just madness, especially in these last 2 months or so. This has just been an unprecedented time for the global gold market. And I thought, well, man, what a great time to get caught up with you. Again, your perspective from London and your perspective and wisdom from all these years in the gold market, I just think is invaluable. And I encourage everybody, James is on Twitter. And so if you get a chance, look him up. James, hit everybody with that Twitter handle real quick.
Yeah, it's FGMR, Free Gold Money Report, at FGMR.
Perfect. That's easy enough. And I'm sure they can just search James Turk and find you that way, too.
Probably so.
But James, this has just been such an unprecedented time. And I know a lot of folks listen to us kind of know the background, but I wanted to kind of go through it step by step with you. Get your perspective on what has taken place. Let's start first with kind of the pre-March 23rd, March 24th run-up, because, you know, everything kind of changed on March 23rd. I've been referring it to as the first day of the rest of your life, because that's when QE to infinity was announced, formalized, you know, and there's no looking back. But going into that period, things were already crazy. Record high open interest, you know, all these EFPs that were taking place. What were you seeing as the year began from your perspective?
Yeah, you know, when the year began, I knew we were pretty close to the what I call the gold cartel finally breaking up and collapsing. And then in February, I did a couple of things where I basically said it has collapsed. But it's not going to be an overnight event like it was back in the 1960s when the London Gold Pool collapsed. This version 2 of the London Gold Pool is going to be a longer drawn-out affair, which is going to take weeks, perhaps months. And, you know, we're now 2 months into this collapse of it. We're starting to see how it's fraying at the edges. It's becoming much visible. You know, back in the 1960s, when the London Gold Pool collapsed, one day in March of 1968, they just announced that they were going to stop manipulating the gold price, and there would be two prices, an official price, which central banks would deal at with one another, and then the market price, which would be much higher than the official price. This time around, it's not happening as visibly as that, but it's still basically the same result. You know, central banks are going to throw in the towel, and it's just a question now how much further they have to try fighting the gold price before they do throw in the towel.
It's almost like, as you say that, I'm thinking it's the same bifurcation now. There's the official price, the price recognized by the CME Group and the LBMA and Bloomberg and CNBC, the futures contract price. And then there's the actual price, the physical price that you have to pay to actually acquire it. It's almost like there's the same.
Yep. Yeah, but hang on a minute, because this is really sort of interesting. You know, there's this so-called price that the LBMA has, which is well below the futures price. But here's how this works. They're happy to buy gold from you if you're willing to sell it to them at that low price. Right. But if you actually want to buy physical, they'll say, well, look, we don't have physical because of these transportation delays, so you have to buy it at the future price, and we'll deliver it to you, you know, some point in time in the future. So, you know, it's already, to a certain extent, you know, like the 1960s, with an official price much lower than what the market price is.
Yeah.
But even the market price is way below where it should be at this moment in time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand that too. Let's then fast forward then to what happened on March 23 and 24, where you had this really what was a near delivery default or a delivery default by other name, where it looked like some parties stood for exchange for physical deliveries, and they were told they didn't have any 100-ounce bars in New York, and so you had this wide blowout of the spread between the spot, the XAU, excuse me, and the futures contract. Is that just an extension of what you were already seeing? Did it just kind of manifest itself in this kind of splintering of the market?
Yeah, exactly. It's just more fraying at the edges. And it was a result because people are finally starting to learn that there's a difference between physical gold and paper gold. And, you know, when you talk about these EFPs and they take the commitment, you know, to deliver gold with some paper here in London, that's still paper. You know, when you deposit gold in a bank, it's just like depositing dollars in a bank. You have bank counterparty risk. And that's what these EFPs are all about. They're not actually delivering physical. They're delivering bank deposit slips, you know, saying that, yeah, we'll give you the gold, but don't ask for it. It basically is what it comes down to, because they don't have the physical behind it.
Yeah. What did you think, James, then when the LBMA was quick to rush out this new contract that with the CME to deliver London bars in New York, or fractional ownership of London bars. And then this assertion from the LBMA, there's plenty of gold, man. And they count the Bank of England's gold as part of the gold that's readily available and to deliver. What'd you make of all that?
It's just part of the dishonesty that we see in our financial system today. I mean, it was an example of it that I put on Twitter this morning. It was a Financial Times headline that EBITDA is now going to be added a C to the end. What earnings would have been before all of those things, including the coronavirus. There's companies actually reporting it that way. I mean, how dishonest can you be? And when it comes to gold, there's so much dishonesty, lack of knowledge, that you know, it's quite understandable that the LBMA has been able to go as far as it's gone in terms of, you know, trying to make the appearance that things are orderly. But back, you know, going back to that March thing, that was clearly a default. And what they're trying to do is continue to paper it over. So they came up with this phony new contract that nobody's used. They've really added to the COMEX stock a lot of the paper deposits and commitments that are here in London, saying that this is gold that's deliverable to contracts. It's all phony, Craig. And, yeah. You know, I can't stress it enough that, you know, when you buy gold, there are only two ways to do it. You buy physical gold, you store it yourself, or you have someone store it for you professionally, which is what we do in gold money. But when you buy paper, you're buying physical gold. So the question is, why are you buying that gold? Are you buying it because you don't want counterparty risk and you want money outside the banking system? Then you have to buy physical. If you want to speculate on the gold price, buy futures or you know EFTs or any of these other things, ETNs and whatnot. But if you want physical gold, you have to buy physical gold and make sure that your storage of that physical gold is safe, because what we really want going forward from here is physical gold, just like we did back in the 1970s.
Yeah. You know, I want to get back to that. Thank you for reminding me that. I wanted to ask you about the 1970s. I'm making a quick note, but before we leave this notion, excuse me, of a breaking market. And I mean, obviously you recall the London gold pool and how it just stopped in a day. And you said, this is not quite the same. What would be a sign that, I mean, obviously what happened in March is a pretty good sign that there's trouble.
Yeah. It's been building up. First of all, we know it's been manipulated. There's a documentation on the GATA.org website. Anybody who wants to go back and look at it. The logic of the manipulation is also there, because gold is a competitor to fiat money, and governments want control of the money system because that gives them power. So they're going to be anti-gold. They'll do everything in their power to stop gold from rising. And there's a lot of government documentation supporting that and showing that that's their point of view. So there's that, first of all. But then things started really becoming unraveled for me 3 years ago when I started talking the big increase in exchange for physical. I'm an old futures trader, so I know about these things. And EFPs were a little esoteric thing, you know, years ago that were hardly ever used and fewer people even knew about. Now they've become, you know, front and center, but it's a sign that it was fraying at the edges. The fact that you could see the way it was trading itself, the way the markets trade, being involved in markets as long as I had, you can see that things were just funny. Wouldn't be happening the way they were happening, you know, except long, narrow trading ranges, takedowns during the day at the same moment in time, and a lot of other different things. But then March was, you know, me, that was, you know, clear evidence that things are really, really, you know, very, very close to falling apart. We've not yet fallen apart yet, because they're still trying to keep the gold price from rising. once we were over 1900, I don't think they're going to be able to circle the wagons anymore. And we're going to have a much, much higher gold and silver price, too, for that matter, Craig.
And since it's a really just a confidence game, you know, people are confident. Well, you know, they've told me I can come get my gold anytime I want, so I'll just believe them for now. Since it's essentially a confidence game, will it just simply take, a one or a series of delivery defaults that will finally break it? I mean, how do you see that playing out?
Yeah. They're going to do everything they can to avoid declaring a force majeure. That's why they came up with this new COMEX contract. Right. So who knows what else they have up their sleeve? So what you have to do is ignore the propaganda, you know, read between the lines and just think logically, you know, and go back to the basic premise that physical gold in your hand, physical gold stored for you professionally, that's very different from paper gold.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to keep coming back to, because based on, you know, monetary history, the various valuation models that I use, gold and silver are exceptionally cheap here.
Right. No doubt about it. To that end of paper obligations and what's gold and what isn't, and I think one of the worst things in the world is this GLD for a number of reasons. Fine if you want to trade, you know, maybe buy some options and you want some very short-term price exposure. But the fact that then it's even run by the World Gold Council, which skims, you know, millions and millions of dollars of fees off of it, and it's like, and they hate gold. It seems like they do everything they can to talk down gold. But now we find out through some great investigative work by the guys at Bullion Star that now the GLD is actually sourcing gold as from a sub-custodian of the Bank of England. What does that tell you about the situation in the physical market in London?
Yeah, you know, I've been anti-GLD since it was first launched back in 2004, and I've got a lot of stuff on the internet that I've written identifying all of the big loopholes in the prospectus that, you know, big enough you could drive a Mack truck through as the old man goes. But what you have to really do is just look at one thing. You get the 10Q from the SEC, and this is the GLD's 10Q where it reports its financial statements, and look at the assets on its balance sheet. It says invest in gold. It doesn't say gold. Investments in gold can be anything. It can be physical metal, but it could be just promises to pay physical metal at some future date. If it's that gold, the auditor would have to go into the vault and prove that the gold actually exists, which is what we do in gold money. But the GLD doesn't do that. They just have investment in gold on their balance sheet. So you know right away, who knows what's in that balance sheet? It could be just a lot of paper. And I do think that there is a lot of paper there. And this latest news about them borrowing gold from the Bank of England, which is already a fractional reserve system in terms of having so much more gold in commitments than they do actually have in the vault. It's just part and parcel of this game that they're playing to make believe that there's a lot more gold in the world than there really is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And definitely not helping. What do you make, James, when we look at the LBMA and the changes of the last couple of years and this kind of condensing pile of market makers and the rest, you know, Scotiabank through their ownership of Mocatta gives them, or had given them, kind of the title of the oldest bullion bank going back, what, like 17th century, for crying out loud. It's a business decision. I assume they're just figuring out that they can't make money at it anymore. And that, you know, maybe the light of investigation and legal fees and everything goes with it just makes it not worth it. But what do you make of them getting out of the metals business?
Yeah, I don't have any insight in terms of their thinking, but one of the possibilities is that, they see the potential liability from all of this price rigging. Therefore, they want to ring fence themselves, get out of it, and avoid future lawsuits when this thing comes collapsing down. Who knows, what they were thinking. This house of paper that's constructed in the gold market will come tumbling down. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. What do you think replaces it, James? I mean, in your an ideal world, what would you see? Well, like to see replace it?
Well, back in the 1990s, before I started Gold Money, I got patents on what I call digital gold currency. You actually use gold as currency, but instead of using coins, you click it around through from your computer to someone else's computer. The gold stays in the vault, but the ownership of the gold transfers from you to the other person. What really should be using for money? We should actually be using gold, but rather than use 19th century coins, they use 21st century technology to enable that gold to circulate as currency. I'd love to see us moving in that direction because there's, in my mind, there's an inextricable link between sound money and politically honest money and individual liberty. And as we see things impacting our, you know, our freedoms, I get more and more concerned about going down this fiat money route because this is clearly the wrong way to go based on any historical historical analysis of collapses in the monetary systems. You know, you can go the right way or you can go the wrong way. After America's first currency collapsed in the 1780s, after the War of Independence, the framers of the Constitution went the right way and they put gold and silver into the Constitution and then reconfirmed the Coinage Act of 1792. And it stayed that way until 1971. You know, it wasn't a perfect system, but we live in a world that's not perfect. It was much better than anything else. And now we're living in these last 50 years and learning the same problems that the framers had with the Continental, which was the first currency. So are we going to go back to the right way or are we going to go the wrong way like Germany did after their currency collapsed in the 1920s, which brought about, you know, fascism and ultimately led to the Second World War? That's how serious of an issue this is when you have politically dishonest money circulating as currency.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's, in our final minutes, James, let's talk about, I want to get your opinion of the 70s, because I'm sure you remember it well, and it was a period of stagflation, right? Stagnant economic growth, but high inflation. You had sharply negative real interest rates. And those couple of things combined to make, you know, and plus the long-term suppression, really, of the price at $35 an ounce led to this explosion to, what, $800 an ounce or whatever we got to in 1979 and 80. A lot of parallels there to where we seem to be headed. Do you see it that way?
I do, but there are also a lot of differences that we have to keep in mind. Back in the 1970s, the U.S. was the largest creditor nation in the world. You know, now we're the largest debtor nation in the universe. And you know, back in the 1970s, there was still a lot of savings and wealth created so that when hard times came, you know, people could rely on their savings or accumulated wealth. Today, for liquidity, people are borrowing. They're not dipping in savings. You know, over the last 50 years, we've just we've destroyed the whole concept of savings, which is why the middle class is hurting so much.
Right.
And so, you know, there are social societal issues that we have to think about today that are very different from the 1970s. So get back to your point, though, just looking at the gold market itself, I think the potential for gold is much greater today on the upside than it was back in the 1970s. And there's certain logic to this, too, Craig, because, again, if you look at monetary history, we always revert to the mean. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to money, the mean is gold. Mm-hmm. So we're going to revert to gold. And that means gold's going to become much more highly valued as people understand its usefulness as we move back toward gold at some future date.
You'd mentioned silver earlier, too. Let's finish with that. Do you see, I don't know, it could even could that be remonetized by maybe certain countries, smaller countries, who knows?
You know, anything's possible. And, you know, it could go back into its historical role as small change for, you know, gold, because you couldn't really circulate gold coins because of the high value. And therefore, silver served as that purpose. I have a different view these days. I really see silver as a gold substitute. In other words, what 1 ounce of gold does for you, money outside the banking system with no counterparty risk, you now have 108 ounces of silver doing the same thing for you. But the interesting thing is that, you know, there's only, geologists tell me, you know, 12 or 15 times more silver in the Earth's crust than there is gold. And there's only 12 or so times more silver produced every year than there is gold. Well, why isn't the ratio 12 or 15 to 1 instead of 108 to 1? It's simply because people don't understand silver And they see it as an industrial metal, and they're thinking, who wants an industrial metal in an economic depression? My point is that it's a gold substitute. And given the relatively small supply of silver compared to the big above-ground stock supply of gold, silver is going to outperform going forward. When that begins, I don't know. You know, I've been saying this since it was in the 90s. Yeah. You know, here we are at 108. But if you're patient and you want to take the risks, I think, you know, putting 20-25% of your portfolio, your metal portfolio, into silver, you know, makes sense.
And the global silver market structured basically the same way as the global gold market, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can't let silver run to its value if you're going to suppress the gold price. So, you know, they sit on everything.
Yeah. James, for acquisition of physical metal and storage, gold money is always a great choice. Can you kind of go back and tell everybody a little bit about it?
Yeah, I started it back in 2001, and the whole idea behind it was not only storage, but to be able to use gold as a form of currency, which you can still do. But, you know, Gresham's Law applies. Gresham was the advisor to Queen Elizabeth I 400 years ago, and he came up with this principle that bad money drives out good. You tend to save the good money and get rid of the bad money and use that as currency. So what I found with gold money is that people wanted it as a mechanism for saving, for accumulating, because you don't really save fiat currencies today. It doesn't make sense. If you want to save, you save gold, you save silver. So I built up a mechanism for people to save and do it very convenient, economically, and most importantly, very secure. You know, you have audits, insurance, and all mm-hmm. of those types of things. And you have the opportunity to put your gold in professional vaults in different locations around the world. We don't use banks because I always say if you want to keep your gold safe, don't put it in the bank. Put it right. in a company that's a professional storage company, you know, like Loomis or Brinks or any of those, you know, companies that we use for storing metal.
Yeah.
So we're storing about $2 billion worth of precious metals for customers all around the world.
Fantastic. Again, goldmoney.com if you want to learn more. James, I got to tell you, I learn more every single time we talk, and I can't believe it's been so long since the last time we spoke, so we got to do this again sometime too.
I'd be happy to do it, Craig, anytime. Just let me know.
All right, my friend, you stay safe, you stay healthy and well, and keep an eye on things over there, and yeah, let's visit again soon.
Yeah, we'll do, and same to you, and let's watch this gold price head higher as we move toward the end of the year.
Let's do it. And everybody, thank you for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.